Our lunchtime guest today is Kevin Sharp. He's the founder of Zero Carbon World, who's going to be giving a talk this evening about whether electric cars are the future for Jersey. Well, Sarah's gone down into the car park at the front of BBC Jersey to meet him as he's brought over a high-performance electric car called the Tesla Roadster. Now, Sarah, I was expecting a sort of piddly smart car, but it looks like, I don't know, it's like a racing car out there.
It's like a Lotus Elan. Yeah, that's right. I think when you think of electric cars, you think, oh, a bit boring. I wouldn't want to be seen in one of those. But I think we'd all want to be seen in one of these, to be fair. If you could get in, it is very sporty in as much you feel like you're sitting on the ground when you get in. But as you say, it's called a Tesla Roadster. And I'm joined here in the car park here with Kevin Sharp, who's the founder of Zero Carbon World. Welcome to Jersey, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
Have you been here before?
No, I've not. It's the first visit and we're having a great time.
So tell us a little bit about the car, then you can tell us about your journey as well. We've got the bonnet and the boot up at the moment because you were showing me the battery. I think the thing people wonder is, you know, how long is it going to last? How do I charge it up? All those things, because an electric car is, they've got a bit of an idea, but not much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this represents a sort of pinnacle of the latest generation of electric cars. So we're looking at very high performance, 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds. Limited to 125 mile an hour, but a theoretical speed of 200 mile an hour, and with a range of over 200 miles, 211 miles is the official range. So I think it's you know, a very practical example of just where this technology is today, in that, you know, we can drive all over the country, as I have done, driven from John O'Groats to Land's End, for example, which was approximately 900 miles. And what's significant of that, most significant, is the electricity to do that would have cost me £20. So, you know, there's a huge benefit in terms of costs for all of us to actually run these vehicles and to fuel them.
So when you did your John O'Groats to Land's End, how often did you stop to have to charge up?
Well, on that trip, we basically did that as an indication to show that there was public charging available. And we stopped, I believe, six times, if I remember correctly. And in total, that journey took us 30 hours. So it's not the sort of journey that everybody's going to undertake.
Sure.
But it was an indication of what was possible at that time. In fact, if we did that today, we could do that in 24 hours. And next generation cars can certainly do that in 16 to 18 hours. So we stopped primarily at hotels. And there's a increasing number of hotels installing charging today. And in fact, in one of the projects we're working on, there are over 200 locations across the UK today, and there will be over 400 locations by the middle of the year.
Mm.
So these are, you know, where you would normally go. They're often, you know, major brands who are promoting charging in this way, and usually the charging is free.
Right.
So it's literally, you go there, it can be you go and have a meal at the restaurant, you know, or you go and stay overnight, but then they will give you the charging for free.
Mm. I mean, how many... My son was all over me when I told him that I was seeing this. He'd seen it. And he was telling me about laptop batteries. Tell me the figure of sort of equivalent laptop batteries you got in your boot there.
Yeah, absolutely. So in this particular car, there are just under 7,000 of the cells that are used or an equivalent of laptops. And the reason Tesla went that route is that they wanted to deliver a high-performance car, but within spending less than $1 billion. So if they'd embarked on developing a battery from scratch, they would have spent that billion just on the battery alone.
Mm.
So what Tesla have demonstrated is that you can produce extremely reliable products. I mean, the battery in here is warrantied for 10 years or 100,000 miles, and that warranty means that after that, either 100,000 miles or 10 years, I will have at least 80% of the capacity that I did on day one.
Mm.
So, you know, you're looking at something that's capable of using a battery, depending on your requirements, 20 years, 25 years. So, you know, it's a long-term solution.
Yeah, because of course people are thinking, well, how practical is this going to be? I mean, you know, because it is an up and coming market, as you were saying, more and more people getting involved. And I must admit, when I sort of wondered how you were going to plug in and all that sort of thing, I mean, you literally just pulled out a lead that had a normal, regular 3-pin plug on the end. I was quite surprised. I thought it'd be a bit more elaborate than that.
Yeah, so I think it's important to realise that the majority of us do plug into just you know what we would deem to be ordinary 3-pin sockets that we have everywhere throughout our houses. Now there are other options, so you can use commercial what we call commando sockets that give you faster charging, but most of us charge overnight. And you know, one of the things that's important to understand is that most of our cars spend most of the night stationary because we tend to sleep. So that's when most of these cars are actually charged up. They're charged when you know, when the vehicle is stationary. So people always ask me how long does it take to charge? And there are really two answers to that. One is 3.5 hours. So that's the fastest this can charge with a suitable socket.
Is that when it's gone really low? I mean, you presumably... dead, is it?
Or, yeah, or empty to full. Okay. So that's 211 miles of range, 3.5 hours. Now, the more glib answer to that would be 10 seconds, because it's the 10 seconds it takes me to plug it into the wall, because I don't sit there and watch it for 3.5 hours. You know, I don't need to do anything. I literally go home, plug it in, go in and get on with my life. Mm. You know, you don't do... so you don't sit around watching these things. So long as you have an overnight time, or 3.5 hours or greater if you have a suitable charging location, then it's fine.
Yeah. Mm. And what about the cost of the electricity? Does it draw more down?
I think that's a really important point is the cost of electricity is so low compared to petrol. So a typical overnight charge for this vehicle would be around £2 to £3. And what that represents in terms of mileage is I can drive, in fact, I drove this to Geneva and back. So 2,000 miles from Bath to Geneva and back, and that costs £50 electricity.
Probably more in tolls on the French autoroute.
Yeah, absolutely, and the Channel Tunnel cost us more than the rest of it put together. Yeah. I mean, it's extraordinarily different from what we've got used to paying for our energy.
Mm. The states have their energy white paper, and they've proposed that 23% of the island's total projected reduction in carbon emissions could be achieved through the introduction of cars like this. I mean, is that feasible? Is that the future?
There's no doubt that this is the future. I mean, if you look at, say, Renault today, they have 4 vehicles in full production. Everybody you can think of, Ford, Vauxhall, all of the brands that you can think of have electric cars in production. And I think the sheer economics of it mean that we will be going down this path. I'd like to see it very, very quickly. In fact, we had a meeting this morning with Jersey Electricity, and they have some, you know, major projects underway to deliver electric cars. I think they have a fleet of about 30 at the moment. Mm. And we'd love to sort of support what they're doing, and, you know, for Jersey to become... not only to have its indigenous transportation based on electricity, but also for us to have, you know, this to be a tourist location for green tourism.
Mm.
Because one of the things, you know, I travelled from Bath to here. Well, I could have been, you know, from London or anywhere in the UK in this vehicle, travel down to Poole, get on the ferry, come across, and then I could travel around here using, you know, potentially green or very low carbon electricity.
Mm. I suppose people's worry is when they see that they're running out of petrol, they can see where the nearest petrol station is. They see they're getting low on charge, they're not quite sure where they could possibly go. And to sort of knock on someone's door and say, can I just plug myself in for 3.5 hours? I suppose, but as you say, as time moves on, but that could be the worry initially.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there was a time that was a problem. Now, I've driven in 2.5 years, I've owned this car 40,000 miles, I've never run out of electricity. And, you know, and in fact, I've never had to knock on a door. Now, the reality is, if you look around us here where we're stood today, every single building here has electricity, everywhere. And, you know, you can go anywhere in the country and there's electricity, because it's just, you know, ubiquitous. We have
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So the challenge is to get that last sort of, you know, few feet to between the outside wall and your power supply. But my feeling is, and I have no doubt, that with people like the National Trust and major hotel chains actually delivering this today, you know, it's going to be everywhere.
And if you're really, really green, you can have solar power, presumably, and pull it off that.
Yeah, well, you know, at home, we invested in a home system, so we put panels on our roof. And we live in a very sort of modest, semi-detached house from the 70s that lots of people would recognise. And we put on a 7-kilowatt system, which cost us £15,000, so a big investment. But that now, in the summertime, that generates between 800 and 900 miles a week. So, you know, we actually generate enough off our roof to drive 2 cars, because we don't typically do 900 miles in a week. So, effectively, once we've made these investments, we drive for free. So, you know, and, you know, the added benefit of it being sustainable and renewable electricity is obviously huge.
Well, we'll chat to you a little bit more upstairs in the warmth of the studio, find out a little bit more about you and about Zero Carbon World, which you've founded. But we're also joined down here by Mark Forskett. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Sarah.
Because you're responsible, I think, for bringing Kevin over, or for looking after him while he's over here. So why is he here, and what's he going to be doing later?
He's primarily the meeting this evening, that we have a public meeting at the Société, and really talking about electric vehicles and the future, and particularly with relevance to his experience of using them. For a lot of us, it's something that is an idea. It's not something we've experienced. Kevin here has a wealth of experience. He's got a lot of knowledge about what's being done elsewhere in the world and how to get people interested and enthusiastic, how to learn about how to install these things, and what the and how we've solved, other people around the world have solved a lot of the issues. So it's now a possibility, a real possibility to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I know we were talking there about cost, Kevin, and I know before, what did you say this car retails as, this sort of sports model?
Well, this sports model would cost around £90,000. There were only 2,500 of this particular one built, and all hand built, so it's a very high-end niche vehicle, but it does compare favourably with similar, you know, high performance brands that we all know. You know, it's a very expensive and therefore, you know, quite a rarefied sort of area. This,
but as you said, all the major manufacturers are bringing them out, and I've seen cars around London. Is it the Twingo, the Twizzle?
Twizzy? Yeah,
that, I knew it was something
yeah,
silly.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, the Renault Twizy is what we strictly call a quadricycle. It's a 2-seat sort of run around, but it will do, you know, officially 60 miles for 60 pence, and it's costs around £6,000.
Yeah, so it varies, doesn't it? I was just thinking of the cost, because people are always sort of, you know, well, how does that make
Well, there is another aspect to that, of course, because these cars, the first generation, have been around for a bit. We're starting to see a bit of a second-hand market develop, and of course those are cheaper vehicles to buy. So, you know, after people like maybe taxi drivers who do a lot of miles get a lot of value out of this, well, obviously after a point they need to get a new one because of presentation and all the other things. So this, you start to get these vehicles on the second-hand market. So that will happen as well. So there will be another cost advantage there.
Oh, that's the bonnet shutting in the wind. it's probably the loudest noise it's ever made.
I think so, yeah, absolutely.
So where are you going to be this evening? So if people want to come and see this lovely car and hear more about it, what's going to be happening?
8 o'clock at the Société on Pier Road, yep.
Lovely. I'd ask you to switch it on, but there's probably not much point.
It's actually switched on at the moment.
Well, there we are then. No, we can't hear a thing.
No.
So, but it's fabulous and it's lovely. And I've taken lots of pictures as well, because, as I say, my son knew all about it when I mentioned it to him. But that's the way, isn't it? I mean, you know, the future is. And, you know, when he sort of gets further down the line and buys a car, who knows, it'll probably be electric.
Yeah, I have no doubt. And in fact, if you look at the Renault Twizy, it's been very much marketed to 16 to 18 year olds. And I personally believe that once people have actually driven those cars, they will never step into a traditional, you know, internal combustion engine car, because, not least because, if they can drive 60 miles for 60 pence, you can't possibly ask them to start spending pounds on petrol. It just will never happen.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's an inevitability about this technology, and you know, the sooner we can all get our minds around that and actually make this transition, the better for all of us.
Just think how quiet it would be standing here on the street without a car going past. Well, cars would go past. It'd just be so quiet, wouldn't it? To the birds and the children playing.
You know, in some ways, that's one of the unique opportunities here. We actually could quieten down our environment. And that would be a very powerful thing to do. You know, it'd be wonderful.
Would. More radio. Right. OK, Carrie. So there we are. It's a beautiful car, as I say, and really lovely. And you can see it tonight at the Société at Pier Road at about 8 o'clock. And we'll come on up with Kevin and we can find out a little bit more about him.
Come upstairs in the warm. Have a cup of tea. BBC Radio Jersey will hear more from Kevin Sharp from Zero Carbon World. He's the founder of that in just a few minutes. So our lunchtime guest today is Kevin Sharp. He's the founder of Zero Carbon World and he's giving a talk this evening about whether electric cars are for the future of Jersey, or at least sharing what he's got. And Sarah was just having a look at his Tulsa Roadster downstairs in the car park, and Kevin's come up to the studio now. Kevin, I just heard that 2,000 miles for £50, that's an incredible figure, isn't it?
It is extraordinary, yeah, particularly compared to what we're all used to paying for petrol. But it's actually the figure that we use, you know, every day. Everybody that drives electric are just used to incredibly low costs for the energy that they're actually using. Part of it is because electric vehicles are so efficient that, you know, and actually in converting energy to motion, so you gain some benefits there, but also because electricity is just very low cost compared to petrol or diesel.
Do you think we should be further along than this by now? Would you have expected that we'd embrace it more by 2013?
Yes, I mean I'd yes, a great question. I would love it if we were further along. It would have been, you know, partly because oil is an incredibly valuable commodity. You know, it makes incredible pharmaceuticals and plastics that we just cannot manufacture in any other way. So I find it very bizarre that, you know, one of the main things we do with oil is burn it. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more we can do to make a transition to an alternative way of an alternative energy source, then the better for all of us. Mm. And personal transportation is a significant producer of CO2 and also, of course, of other pollution. So actually, the sooner we can do something about that, I think the better for all of us.
I mean, you kind of would have thought, as soon as you had the technology, that everyone would go, we'll do that then.
Yeah, you would hope so, yeah. But, you know, often these things just take longer, you know. And you know, we just have to accept that there's a process in place. And but the technology is established. I mean, all of the major manufacturers are there with vehicles. Some of them have four or more vehicles in production. So, you know, all of the brands that people are driving today, there will be an electric version of. And now there are some challenges over pricing because, you know, at the moment, many of these are built in low volumes, so they're not yet benefit from all the price reductions of volume manufacturing. But it's just a matter of time.
Mm. Now, you founded Zero Carbon World. How did you get into this world? Where does your passion for the environment come from?
Well, I've always had a passion really for the environment, and you know, I've always been interested in transition. You know, how we might move society from where I think most of us would probably agree fairly unsustainable to somewhere that you know, maybe would be more sustainable. And having kids, you know, it's obviously, it does sort of focus your mind, I think. My business interests are actually in the medical field, in medical IT, and I own a number of companies which I started, and they're all based now in the US, in primarily in Portland and Oregon, over on the West Coast. But about 3 or 4 years ago, I started really thinking about what I wanted to do next. And I thought, well, you know, I don't really want to undertake yet another business. I'd spent 20 years building my business. So instead of that, I thought, well, if I'm really passionate about renewable energy and electric vehicles and the synergy between them, and I felt that a charity model would be a great way of actually being very transparent about what we're doing and also of opening doors. You know, it's with a charity, of course, it's possible to sort of push through doors and get to see people who might be more difficult if it was a commercial, if you were running a commercial company. So that's sort of really the background to the passion, is to a desire to really make a difference and to get involved and be proactive.
So Zero Carbon World is a charity?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we have a number of different sort of project areas. We're involved in reforestation, electric vehicles and renewables. And the two major ones, what we're really talking about here in Jersey, are renewables and electric transportation. And really, you know, having lived with an electric car for 2.5 years, and we power it from home, from our roof, from solar on our roof, it's really to share that experience. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, I'm sat here today with you, but at home, you know, my solar system is making electricity, and it may be cloudy and grey, but it's still making electricity. So, you know, it just does its thing. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to do anything about it. And the car is in many ways the same. It's still a car. And, you know, the question about how long does it take to charge, for instance, well, my glib answer is, you know, the 10 to 15 seconds that it takes me to plug in, because that's what I do. You know, at night, I just plug it in and job done.
Mm. How has the rest of Europe taken it up?
There's enormous difference to government support across the across Europe. I think the UK, I think it would be fair to say, is not terribly progressive. The clear leader in this space is Norway. Norway have a tax system for electric vehicles that really promotes electric vehicles over internal combustion engine vehicles. And as such, in 2012, 5% of all new cars were electric. Now, that's huge. And that came from almost a standing start. So there are some projections this year that look with them having maybe 10 to 15% of the market, new car market, being electric in Norway this year.
I mean, you said because we aren't making them in vast quantities that it doesn't benefit, or it doesn't benefit from great prices yet. Could Britain be manufacturing electric cars down the line?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. I mean, one of the really significant things is that this technology, if you look at the technology in an electric car, it's very, very different from an internal combustion engine car. I mean, for instance, we have no gearbox. You know, we could argue there's one moving part, which is the motor, you know, and then compare that to an internal combustion engine with maybe 500 moving parts in it. But all of this technology is very high-tech, computer-based technology that we could be, you know, a world-class leader in. And it's also significant to realise that Nissan, for instance, are building the Leaf up in the northeast. The Leaf is, which is one of the electric cars, that's launched this year. So we will have UK-made cars and could have many, many more.
Mm. Your car looks pretty special, but what is the most impressive electric car on the market today?
Well, I think in terms of technology, the next Tesla, I think, is the iconic Tesla. So my car was built 4 years ago. It was first generation, 2,500 of them made. The next Tesla is the size of a BMW 5 Series car, so a big mainstream car. It actually has 5 adult seats and 2 kids jump seats, but it has over 300 miles of range and can be recharged in 45 minutes. So in terms of technology, you're looking at a car that's highly comparable with, you know, the higher end products, very fast, 0 to 60 in under 5 seconds, which for a big family car is very impressive, over 125 mile an hour car. So, you know, it's a car, a mainstream car, but highly desirable and full of technology.
What happens at the moment if you break down? Because I presume the AA don't know what to do with you.
Well, the AA are, I mean, you know, there are recovery services. Of course, the technology is very different from, you know, you can't really fix one of these on the roadside. Mm. But this is part of the shift that's taking place. For instance, my car, if I allow it, will communicate with Tesla, you know, continuously. And if my car identifies a fault developing, it will actually tell Tesla so that Tesla can schedule a repair before the fault gets catastrophic. And I've actually experienced that myself, where I got home one afternoon late, and a warning came up on my dashboard saying that I had an indicator problem. I thought, oh, I'm too busy to deal with this at the moment. So I went into the office at home, sat down, and as I turned the computer on, an email came from Tesla saying that the car had recognised there was a fault, and more amazingly, that they had an engineer going past the door the following morning. So by 10 o'clock the following morning, that fault was fixed on that car because the car had communicated. Now, you know, that sounds like science fiction, but actually that's the reality of this sort of technology. You know, it's much closer to the sort of computers we're carrying around that we call phones today, you know, than the traditional car that we're used to.
I was looking, a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago had posted a photograph of his car park somewhere in the UK, and it's his office that he goes to every day, and there had been two spaces that were allocated to recharging electric cars that had never been used, and then he ended up borrowing one of the spaces and getting a ticket in it, and he was having a bit of a go at the world. I mean, was the message a bit confused initially? Did people get ahead of themselves? Are there many of those spaces out there?
Well, we're in a sort of classic chicken and egg situation. Mm. You know, one of the reasons people will say to you why they won't invest in electric cars is because there's nowhere to charge. So, of course, you know, we do need these charging locations. And in many cases, we do want them. It's applicable for them to be in car parks because, you know, you may go shopping and while you're parking, you may want to charge. One of the issues has been historically is that many of these spots are very high-profile locations. So often you see them right at the entrance to the, you know, on a service, motorway services, for instance, you'll see these spots right at the entrance to the service station, you know, as people go into the main building. I personally think that these should be in more discreet locations when people don't want to sort of compete for them, you know, for this space. But unless we solve this chicken and egg, we won't encourage people to adopt electric cars. Now, having said that, well over 90% of your charging will be done either at home or at work. Mm. And, in, you know, indeed in your car park here, there are two cars sat down there. You know, if they were both electric, they could be plugged in, you know, just simple sockets on the wall and they could be plugged in. So, you know, employees of the BBC here, for instance, could drive electric and plug in. You know, that's a sort of option, as could many people, because many people do commute and their car is stationary while they're working.
So how long do they need to be plugged in to how many hours on the road?
It varies by technology. So the fastest, mine's a first generation car, so the fastest mine can charge empty to full, so 200 plus miles, is 3.5 hours.
Right.
The next generation cars, 320 miles for 45 minutes. So it just depends on the car and the technology. But you are rapidly getting to the point where you could drive 300 miles, stop and have a coffee, charge for half an hour or 45 minutes and drive another 300 miles. Mm. And in the UK, very few people will drive more than 600 miles in a day.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, that's a long, long way.
We're not going to drive that here. We're only five.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the great things about Jersey is that, you know, you're not looking at these sort of distances. So actually, probably charging overnight for many or possibly charging during the day would be the solution for you.
So you think it's feasible for Jersey to become one of these places that could lead the way in terms of electric cars?
I have no doubt. I mean, if you made a decision, that's what you wanted, it could happen. I mean, I was talking to Jersey Electricity today, and they have no problem with this. You know, they absolutely would like people to undertake this. And one of the reasons is that electricity at night, we have too much electricity at night. And we actually have to turn down power stations to stop them producing. And that's a very inefficient and expensive thing to do. So what the electricity companies would like all over the world is for something to be using electricity during the night, because we're all asleep. But, you know, in a perfect technology to use that electricity is the electric car.
And design-wise, I mean, yours looks like a pretty flash car. We've got a picture of it on our Facebook page if you want to go and visit Carrie and Sarah. But as you said, I mean, the next generation of that type of car looks a bit more like a normal car. Are they going to look a bit more regular? Because that looks a bit like a spaceship.
Yeah, they are. You know, I mean, the Tesla I was talking about looks like, you know, a high-end Jag or a high-end BMW. I mean, you're going to have a Ford Focus electric, for instance. You know, many of the brands, there's the Renault have several, like the Renault Kangoo van. Well, there's a Kangoo diesel on the road that people are driving around in today. The electric is exactly the same in terms of look, but just happens to be electric. So, yeah, and that's one of the really important things to understand. The previous generation electric cars did all look rather quirky and were particularly, you know, didn't really have the performance that we needed. But this time around, you know, it's mainstream manufacturers delivering products they think we want to buy.
Sarah mentioned a little bit earlier in the car park about this energy white paper we have, which has a proposed goal that 23% of the island's projected reduction in carbon emissions would be achieved through cars like this. You've got a talk tonight. Hopefully, some politicians will float along and say hello and have a look at the car. What sorts of questions do they need to be asking?
Well, I think one of the questions they need to ask themselves is whether tax policy, in terms of giving incentives to electric vehicles over and above petrol vehicles, would be beneficial. And there are lots of elements on this. You know, you could look at the health element, for instance, and say, you know, how is air pollution impacting, you know, your medical and health costs here? You know, that's a powerful argument. So I think the politicians really need to understand the technology exists. There are no technology barriers now. You know, this is, you know, at the end of the day, it's just plugs and sockets. These are electric motors. The first cars were electric. You know, the first taxi service in the 1890s in New York was electric. So this is nothing new. We're just going in a giant circle. But politicians need to really embrace this opportunity. And, you know, there are no reasons at all why Jersey could not become a truly sustainable and you know, environmentally green, if that's a, you know, a sort of word you're interested in, society. You know, it's all possible.
OK, well, for now, Kevin Sharp, thank you very much for being our lunchtime guest today and for bringing your car along. You have a good day.
Yeah, I will do. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It was Kevin Sharp, the founder of Zero Carbon World.